And good morning. Welcome to another episode of Quest Community Vibration, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. And if that did not wake you up, I don't know what will. We will be talking about James Brown a little bit later. But now, I want to thank you for tuning in. And I want to remind you that music like poetry has a message, and history like a diamond shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And news can show us the chain of events that we may not always understand. Now I'm asking you to pull back our musical curtain and see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you will find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibrations. So thank you again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our community. You see, Walter Pierce, student host, presents his diamond of the week on the basketball great Bill Russell, and he will then define the word legacy for his definition of the week. His musical curtain of the day will concentrate on the one and only godfather of soul, James Brown. The elders will have the opportunity to provide comments and ask questions after each segment. And without any further ado, your name is not Maceo, but that's what James Brown, Maceo. Anyway, Walter Pierce, good morning.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And my first segment of today is diamonds. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, my diamond for today, again, is the great Bill Russell. And considered one of the greatest basketball players in NBA history, William Felton Russell was born on February 12, 1934, in Monroe, Louisiana. His early childhood was shaped by poor health, as the sickly Russell battled several different illnesses. When Russell was 10, his father, Charlie, fed up with trying to navigate a radically charged South, moved his family across the country to Oakland, California, where he found work at a shipyard. In California, life for the Russell family proved rocky. While Charlie found good work, in 1946, his wife, Katie, became quite sick with the flu and died. Russell was grief-stricken by the death of his mother, who'd been the biggest advocate and pushed him to work hard in school. In the wake of her passing, he committed himself to the studies. Outside of the school, Russell began playing basketball. His talent did not immediately shine through. Athletically awkward at first, Russell struggled to find his playing time on his team at McClemens High School in Oakland. But by his senior year, his game had picked up enough to earn him a starting spot. Russell's 6'9 frame also earned plenty of attention. In the fall of 1952, he tried out as a walk-on at the University of San Francisco and earned a scholarship. It was not long before the defensively adept Russell proved to be dominating presence. With a scorer's touch and the uncanny ability to rebound, during his three-year varsity career, in which he had led his team to consecutive NCAA titles in 1955 and 1956, he averaged 20 points and 20 rebounds per game. Russell capped his amateur career by leading the U.S. men's basketball team to the Olympic gold medal at the 1956 Melbourne Olympics. That same year in the NBA draft, the Boston Celtics orchestrated a deal with the St. Louis Hawks and traded the draft rights to the young center. The team's coach, Red Archibald, vetted Russell as the missing piece to what he believed could be a championship roster. With Russell anchoring the middle of the floor, the Celtics finished with the NBA's best record in 1957. It went on to win the title over the Hawks in a 10th seven-game series. It was the start of the unprecedented championship run for Russell and the Celtics. Over the 13 seasons in the league, the team played in 12 NBA Finals and won 11 of them. Following the 1969 season, Russell retired from the game. Over the next several decades, he periodically came back to the game as a coach or as an executive, but his teams failed to win with the kind of regularity he enjoyed as a player. He last led the Sacramento Kings as president of basketball operations in the late 1980s. And Russell was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in 1975 and also inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as a player and coach, the first ever. But, you know, even off the court, Russell, an outspoken backer of the civil rights movement, experienced his struggles off it. He was never embraced by Boston fans in the way that his white teammates were. On the road, it was not uncommon for him to have to sleep in a different hotel from one of the others, from one of the others that the team had used. Russell has been married three times. His first wife, Rose, who he homed to marry for 17 years, and he had three children. And in 2010, Russell received Presidential Medal of Freedom, the country's highest civil honor from President Barack Obama. And that concludes my segment on Diamonds on Bill Russell. Bill Russell, you know, being able to be a player's coach just shows how versatile he was in the sport of basketball, and also his great support for the civil rights movement. For the civil rights movement will never be forgotten, as he still lives on today. And, you know, shout out to Bill Russell for keeping it going. And again, that concludes my segment on Diamonds, and you are tuned in to 89.5 WSOU.
A world at peace. You're tuned to Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. Walter, you know, I would be remiss without having to bring in Mr. Harris so that we can chop it up real quickly about Bill Russell. You know, with all the things that people know and information, a lot of times it escapes us to understand and appreciate the shoulders that we stand on. And Bill Russell is definitely a basketball icon and great. And, you know, just to think about what he had to go through. And today's young people not even know who he is. You know, when you mention Mr. Harris, Michael Jordan, or Kobe Bryant, everybody, you know, hands down knows who they are. But when you mention a Bill Russell with 11 championship ring, okay, and some people don't even know who he is. So, Mr. Harris, I'm asking you to chime in to talk about that particular period of history and time, you know, and talk to me.
All right, first let me say good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
Actually, I really wasn't around too much when Bill Russell kind of first got started. But what I've noticed that a lot of people equate the amount of rings you have with the greatest of all times. They say Michael Jordan got 6 rings. That's a really big thing. Kareem has 6 rings. But like you were saying earlier, Bill Russell had 11 rings. He got both hands and a toe. You know, so I ain't going to say it like that, but you know what I mean. But, you know, again, he was one of the greatest, and he won one of those championships as a player coach. You know, and he doesn't get the amount of credit, you know, a lot of people from that era. You know, to me, I think the greatest, if you're really the greatest in any particular sport, your skills have to be so great that they change the game because of you. Because it was an unfair thing, just like they did to Will Chamberlain. They changed a whole lot of the basketball because of him. You have a 3-second rule. You can't be in the lane. You can't be in a lot of stuff because he was dominating people and scoring 100 points in a game. But Bill Russell clearly was one of the – to me, he was the really greatest of all time to do it when he did it and the way he did it. You know, there was no question about that in my mind.
Okay, thank you. So – forever remain classy, like Walter said. We salute you, Bill Russell. Shout out to you. Walter, good pick, man. And I'm going to hand it back over to you.
Yeah, thank you for that. And now we're going to get into the second segment of today of definitions. And this segment provides the listener with words and their meanings so that we could achieve together a common basis, say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And my definition for today is legacy. And legacy the definition that I picked, because there is multiple of them, but the one I have is anything handed down from the past, as from an ancestor or predecessor. And, you know, the reason I bring that up is because I believe, especially in African Americans in this country, you know, we're finally being able to build up a good legacy. And what I mean by that is, you know, the problem is we didn't have anything to pass down or to give to the next generation that can help them succeed as much. You know, when we talked about Tulsa in the past, and, you know, thinking about that and thinking about what happened to the people who lived in the Greenwood Village in Tulsa being, you know, just decimated. And, you know, families and people being unknown of their presence and where they are. And, you know, that lacking of being able to, you know, pass down valuables that the people in Tulsa had to the next generation, because the people in Tulsa during that time were very, very wealthy people and successful people, and not having the ability to be able to pass down some of that wealth to the next generation of African Americans, you know, it doesn't allow them to, like, succeed, which you could say, succeed as much as they did, and to continue to grow an empire for that family. But, you know, for white Americans, it wasn't really the case. A lot of the reason that, you know, white people own a lot of the wealth is because of a legacy, being able to pass down valuables that they had from them, from their success, onto the next generation and keep doing that. And, you know, that allows for legacy to continue. But, you know, I believe in recent times that we as African American people have been more able to do with our generation and our upcoming generation, you know, because of the more success African Americans and the more accessibility that we're having to the world, especially today. So, you know, that's why I bring up the word legacy for today. And I want to bring in everybody else to, you know, make a comment on my definition. And, you know, I want everybody to make a comment on the importance of having legacy and why that is. You know, I would like to have everybody's opinion on that.
Okay. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, take it away.
Good morning.
How you doing? Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, New Jersey, good morning to the world. I agree, I concur with Walter in terms of his assessment and his definition dealing with legacy and the importance of legacy. In most instances, legacy is a perfect example of a legacy is when a gift, especially of money or some sort of property or wealth, is passed down to the younger generation. For example, if somebody has a house, they can actually will it to their child, or they can put it in their will, or what have you, and stuff like that. One of the things that I think is important, and I think Walter actually broached upon it, is that I think I see a lot of people, unfortunately, have funerals in the area, and they don't know the importance of having the insurance to actually prepare for the death burial and what have you, stuff like that. A lot of other ethnic groups actually make sure that those things are in place so that they can pass on a legacy of money so that the family can continue to carry on and pass on generational wealth and what have you. Oftentimes, we find that when people pass away, there's no death benefit that can help assist and secure the family for future generations. I would see that as a very important part of the legacy. So I just think it's important for people to get their finances straight in terms of life and death insurance and property insurance and what have you, in case something was to happen to the household. There's still monies that can actually be used to rebuild another house if need be. So I agree with Walter's assessment of legacy. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Harris, take it away.
As far as legacy is concerned, it's not just financial or something that's just like tangible. You know, so we have a legacy of culture where we carry it down the same way from one generation to another to be able to build on it and move on. But, you know, but see, a lot of the stuff that we do is kept away from us for whatever reason. You know, Walter talked about Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, and that's very important, but a lot of people don't seem to understand or know the foundation of all of that. And just like, you know, they have this thing called Emancipation Day, you know, but most people in the black community look at it as Juneteenth. And it's the same idea, you know. I think it was 1863, after Lincoln did the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, he didn't really free all the slaves. It just freed all the slaves in southern states, you know. But there was a lag between the time 1863. It wasn't until 1865 on the 19th of June that the people in Texas so-called found out that slavery had been abolished within those states. So that was when the true Emancipation Day for us was in Juneteenth. And, you know, it's something that, because whoever wins the wars writes the history books. So I kind of look at it like that, you know. So they're not going to make themselves in a bad light if they can help it, you know. So a lot of things have been exempt from history books. A lot of things are not taught in school. And, you know, and I think it's a positive thing for everybody to understand that history is a flow. There's a good and bad in history, and we need to know both. You know, I just wanted to shout out, you know, I like what Walter was saying about legacy. And some of our legacy is that it's been hid from us. That's our aspect of legacy, at least when it comes to this country.
Okay. Tanisha, I know you're on the line. I can hear you through the line. Good morning, first of all, and I want you to chime in on whatever you'd like to as far as legacy.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, legacy.
Good morning.
It just makes you think about, I guess now in 2021, what impact, you know, as you say, as legacy. That's so funny because you really don't think about legacy as a whole, especially for your family or as a community. And it makes me think to start having conversations, you know, with people, you know, what does legacy mean to you? And how can we truly start building our legacy, whether it be financial, spiritual, and so many different capacities. And I think that's how we can start pushing each other by teaching each other. And I like this because it's a teachable moment, especially, you know, for your children, because you don't think about it. And then when they go to school, are they even asked these type of questions, you know, and especially when it comes to financial literacy, you know, do you know how to balance, you know, your checkbook, you know? Do you understand how to open a bank account? Do you understand how to invest? Do you understand how, you know, to understand, you know, long leverage? And that's very important. And I'm happy, you know, that this was a topic because now I could take it to my girls and ask them, you know, a definition of the day. This is the word of the day, legacy. And what does it mean to you? And how can we build our family legacy?
I love it. I'm coming right back to Tamir Davis. Tamir, what is it that you know or don't know about Juneteenth?
I was just looking at, hold on just one second. And in reality, as Dr. Harris had made mention of, Juneteenth did not free all of the slaves whatsoever. There were still many slaves that were enslaved despite the, it was still a de facto reality. And if we're talking about legacy, there was still the legacy of those slave owners actually still wanting to maintain the reality of the financial benefit of the slave trade. So although it was written as far back as 1863 in terms of Emancipation Proclamation, and there were some aspects of some people that were for the Emancipation Proclamation during the Juneteenth movement. In reality, blacks were still disenfranchised despite the laws that were developed and what have you, and we're still suffering from that sense of disenfranchisement today. So despite it being written with the Emancipation, and then we have to really understand that the Emancipation Proclamation was really a compromise. It was really a compromise because Lincoln was compromising to be able to come to some sort of agreement with the Confederate States. So it wasn't as if he was against it at all. And then even at one point, there was some discussion and some talk in terms of sending Africans right back to Africa. And then some of the politicians figured that they couldn't afford to send all the blacks back to Africa during the American colonization movement because of the fact that it would really cripple the American economy in this country. So the whole Emancipation Proclamation was more so about the interests of the politicians who was looking to still benefit from the ripples of the slave trade and slaveocracy in the Americas.
Mm. You know, Walter, you definitely opened up a can here, because when you talk about disenfranchisement as it relates to the term legacy, our legacy is, you know, there's a book titled Stolen Legacy. Tamir, you know that book, don't you?
Yeah, George G.M. James. Yes, that is a book entitled Stolen Legacy. And Stolen Legacy primarily talks about some of the history that was missed in terms of as far back as Egypt and what was really going on when the Greeks actually went down to Egypt to actually learn. Were they actually the teachers or the students? In most instances, based on the stolen legacy, the reality is that the Greeks that went down to actually study with the Egyptians were actually their students, because they already, you know, like for things as far as the Pythagorean theorem and all these different philosophical concepts that came up into Greece, that was because it was introduced through cultural exchange, if you will. And the cultural exchange was actually a situation whereby the Cometans or the Egyptians were actually the teachers when they went down there. So even when Alexander the Great had sacked different aspects of Kemet or Egypt, they didn't even realize all of the legacy and the history that they was confronting. They didn't understand it whatsoever. So that what the Greeks did not know or understand, they actually destroyed or demolished it. You know, like things, say, for example, the Sphinx and all those different Greek statues and what have you. What they didn't understand, they destroyed. What they felt as if there was a benefit for them, they stole it. And they used it to actually advance their own culture.
Right. And so, Mr. Harris,
there's several
books
about it.
Say that again?
There's several different books about the relationship between the Greeks and the Egyptians. If you read the history of Herodotus, if you read Dr. Ben's book, Black Man on the Nile, there's thousands of books. If you look at in many of the museums and libraries today, a lot of those books and materials and docs are actually stored for the advancement of other people's culture, not really advancing the Africans and the ethnic groups out of Egypt. So it's a shame that the legacy of the Africans was demolished in so many different ways, whereby people just don't understand their cultural history.
Okay. Mr. Harris, I heard Mr. Davis mention the Pythagorean. Am I saying it wrong, that particular theory that came out of Egypt? Could you help me there?
Yeah, you're talking about the Pythagorean theorem. You know, like,
yes.
You know, yeah, but just like he was saying, when the Greeks finally crossed the Mediterranean and came into Kemet, they were really in awe of everything they saw. But, you know, so they wanted to learn as much as possible. So they went. We had universities in Luxor and other places that, you know, they sat at the feet of Africans, learned everything. And by the time they went back to Europe, most of the people in Europe were illiterate, or they had no kind of scientific or cultural knowledge at all. So when Aristotle and all these people came back from Africa and stuff, they thought they were geniuses. But they were only the students. The true geniuses were the teachers. You know, but again, that's, we're back to the stolen legacy. And, you know, and if we don't look at things the way we should, because we haven't had access to all this stuff. Like you said, there are books. There are thousands of books. What really happened with the so-called cultural exchange between Europeans and Africans. You know, but those type of things aren't taught in school. If you want to know this kind of information, you have to go research it yourself. You know, so there's a lot that has to do with that. And, you know, and like when he was talking about Alexander the Great, he wasn't really that smart of a guy. He was a good fighter, you know, but when he saw something that was important, he would take that, snatch up a couple of people there, send them back to Greece, translate all of the stuff they got from this culture, translate it into Greece, put somebody's Greek's name on it, and then said, okay, this is our stuff now. You know, but and see, a lot of people think he went over there and just destroyed everything. What he didn't destroy, he stole, just like the brother was saying. And it's real crazy how much we don't know, you know. And I think that's something important that we need to start doing in our families. You know, we can't expect a public school education to give us the type of education that's going to really help us become mentally strong and large. A lot of this stuff has to be done at home, and we need to start now, because these kids, you know, by the time the older generation is gone, a lot of knowledge is gone. And it's not, and because no one else has really picked it up, we're going to lose a lot, and we're going to keep losing. So it's important that we understand that our legacy goes back thousands of years, not just 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. It goes back 10,000 years and more. You know, and we need to look at that and our little break that we've had between greatness and slavery, or that little 2,000 years or 1,500 years that we had enslaved, that's only a small part of our complete legacy. And, you know, we started civilization, and we might be the one that takes it back again and then rules the world again, because the deeper they dig, the blacker the world gets. So, you know, it's important. All right. Let me stop. Okay.
Well, it's okay. It's fine. And Walter will bear its burden for bringing the word up as his weekly definition. Walter, I want to say to you, we are imitating the imitator. Now, I want you to think about that. And while you're thinking about that, I am not going to waste any more time. I'm going to go straight to the point and say that mental illness is something that has affected the African-American community way before the pandemic even hit. Now, after the pandemic hit, it compounded. You see, in the black community, we don't want to talk about mental illness. It is a taboo, you know. And don't even talk about getting therapy. Oh, no, we don't need that. Well, in fact, we do. And if you or someone you know is suffering from any form of mental illness or depression, or you just need someone to talk to, here's a toll-free 1-800 number, 1-800-662-4357. And that's 1-800-662-HELP. 1-800-662-4357. And to add to that, I'd like to say from online, the best lessons from childhood fables that still matter to us today. That's where I'm getting this information from online. And fables and moral stories made their way into our books and our cartoons when we were kids. But somewhere along the way, we've probably forgotten some of the important lessons they teach. Now, maybe you've heard these and maybe you haven't, but here are some of the best lessons that you can learn no matter what your age is. Without any further ado, I present to you this morning The Ant and the Grasshopper. It's all about the importance of thinking ahead. Now, a team of ants is working hard all summer to prepare for the harsh, cold winter. Meanwhile, a grasshopper spends the entire summer singing, goofing around, and wondering why the ants work so hard. When the winter comes, the grasshopper has nothing to eat and nearly starves to death. Gruesome story for children, huh? Well, the ants save him, and he understands why they work so hard in the story. But here's the lesson. Just because you don't need something right now doesn't mean you should put it off. It's okay to take time to enjoy the fun things, but you may not always have the metaphorical ant to save you. Now, you don't want to wait until winter to buy a heater. You don't want to wait until the day of to buy a plane ticket. You don't want to wait until the day of to write in that essay, you know, the day that is due, or start saving money too late in life. That's even more important. So think ahead. Stop procrastinating and always be prepared for what's ahead. Now, what do you think about that, Walter?
Yes, that was a very good segment and something I am also guilty of when we talk about procrastination. And a lot of people in this world especially is a victim of procrastination. So, you know, that story is very helpful, and I hope everybody has learned from it.
Okay. And we had the team chime in the word legacy. We kind of went in. And so without any further ado, what I want to do is rest our audience just for a moment, and then we're going to come back with your next segment. But right now, you're tuned to Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5. Walter, are you with me? Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
That's where he started. Man, I used to blow a can. Yo, wish I had me a comb and some paper. I'd play some music now. Yeah. What it is and what it is. What it is. Mind power. What it is, what it is.
Okay. What it is. It's Walter, student host, back on you, man. Good morning again.
Yes, good morning. And before I start my segment of curtains, I would like to ask if Mr. Richard Bombay could read the intro for curtains.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Of course, I was all prepared for that. I really felt really good about talking about your definition of the day, legacy. I think it got us all kind of wound up and made us all think, and hopefully we'll have time to kind of reflect on it quickly before we wrap up the day's show. And the moment is curtain, which is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work behind the curtains of the stage. You see, many recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community, but this is the segment where we find out what benefits the community has gained from the artist. Curtain is a review of their musical growth and history and the impact of a particular style and genius and the general moods and attitudes of Yes You, our Quest listening audience. Musical and lyrical social consciousness as presented by the artist over a period of time, right? Curtain serves best as an introduction to and an exploration of a particular artist's and his today's genius and his involvement in influencing all people's style and creativity in the world today. You know, Walter, Reverend Al Sharpton credits a lot of his mentorship to Mr. James Brown, but take it over.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, James Brown is known as the godfather of soul to the hardest working man in show business. You know, James Brown was a musical legend who bridged unforgettable sounds and moves with expressive lyrics. A hero in black culture and music, Brown not only made fans dance, but gave a message lasting beyond the end of the song. He emerged as one of the founding fathers of funk. His musical style often influenced R&B, jazz, and rock. Brown created feel-good music that implied a greater meaning. He used his platform for social and political activism, performing at demonstrations for civil rights organizations in the 1960s. And his music, you know, he created notable songs that encompassed political and social change. The first one I have for you is the song Say Aloud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And it resonated as an anthem to blacks as a way to promote pride and identity during the heart of the black power in the late 1960s and early 1970s. The single was a social commentary to the struggle and progress of African Americans moving from self-doubt and self-determination. He also had a song, I Don't Want Nobody to Give Me Nothing, which promoted equality and self-reliance for blacks to do for themselves instead relying on America. In response to black leaders for not being outspoken enough, he recorded Talking Loud and Saying Nothing, 1970. Funky President, according to Brown, referred to the U.S. President Gerald Ford, who succeeded Richard Nixon in the White House shortly before it was recorded. Lyric, people, we got it over before we go under. Showed blacks being social and economic welfare, which is being defeated by the government. And I have another one here, Brown's Don't Be a Dropout, emphasized pro education due to dropout rates in the 1960s. And Brown, who dropped out of high school after seventh grade, knew the significance of being an advocate for education amongst the youth. He made public speeches in schools. He donated to charities that had dropout prevention programs. Aside from investing in youth, he developed black businesses for the community. And while he spoke on the political sphere,
he didn't shy away from the social problems affecting Black communities with singles King Heroin and the ballad Public Enemy from album There It Is, dealt with drug addiction. Putting his activism to work the day after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., he gave a televised concert at the Boston Garden on April 5th, 1968, following the death of King. Many neighborhoods resorting to riot, city officials feared extensive violence. Wanting to resist brutality, former mayor of Boston, Kevin White, was influenced by Brown to broadcast his concert multiple times on Boston's television station, WGBH, thus keeping potential rioters off the street. Aside from his social and political songs, he created also a lot of other songs that, you know, will get you out and dance floor moving a lot. And, you know, just Brown, who was just a unique artist, captured his audience with the soulful and political lyrics. Not forgetting his electric dance moves, his limitless talents influenced everyone from Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger, who he met early in his career. And in 1986, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, passed away on December 25th, 2006, at the age of 73. And, you know, all of that being said, it was a lot, but, you know, James Brown was somebody who was a huge advocate for social and political change, and we got to give a shout-out for somebody on a level that he was on for doing things like that and also investing and donating to Black communities. Now, without further ado, let's get into some music by the great James Brown.
I want to get into it, man, you know, like a sex machine, man, moving, doing it, you know. Can I count it off? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mr. Harrison, I know you've spoken on our program about James Brown, including legacy in the entire show. Give us your summary. Talk to me, brother.
Yeah, when it comes to funky music, James Brown is the original, innovator. It's more of a feeling than a sound. That's what he used to say. You know, and if it wasn't for James Brown, most of these rap artists wouldn't have had any music behind them. He's the most sampled guy, like, ever when it comes to hip-hop. And there's nothing bad you can say about James Brown, except that he's gone too soon.
Okay. Thank you very much for your participation and your contribution for our program every week, right? Let's go to Tamir Davis. Same thing to you, brother. Thank you for your contribution and your participation every week.
for our program, but give us a quick summary, synopsis, may whatever you want to call it. Talk to me, brother.
You can't talk about legacy without realizing and recognizing what James Brown had done. That is a great example of a legacy, Mr. James Brown himself, Mr. Funk God, Mr. Soul. Thank you.
Okay. I love it. I love it. Same, Tanisha, you know, you've heard a lot here, right? Talk to us. Give us your summary. And thank you as well for your contribution and your participation each and every week. Talk to us.
Yeah, yeah, definitely with James Brown, how he tied in the music and the political and the music and the time. And
okay, I just turned it down, you know, because we run out of time. Okay, so Walter, I'm going to bring it back to you. Close us out, man.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations, live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall, South Orange. This is student host Walter Hughes, and Quest Youth Radio is the best.
The best youth radio.
Yep. And get up, do what you can. Get up, do what you can. So the world can see. You can't run the game. It means nothing to me.